Mr. Batterton, Reel 3. We're talking about your training at HMS Excellent, Whale Island.
Yeah.
I wondered what other guns you had a go on or trained on, of the larger guns.
We were on small arms, but we did training on the gun crews for bigger guns, for 4-inch and things like that, where you had as many as 6 or 7 in each crew.
Can you remember what the gun drill was like? On a 4-inch?
Yeah, it was... I don't remember the details of how it set up, but once you've got the gun, the shell in the gun itself, and the breech was closed, and whoever was doing the firing, and then it more or less, once the gun had fired, it was a case of opening up, letting the cylinder, the empty shell case, come flying out, and then you put another one in and carried on the routine. But I never did a lot of on that heavy gun job.
They had an accident once with a 4-inch shell.
Yeah,
I
was a bit clumsy, and I dropped it on the chief PO's toe. Oh. And he said, "Oh, that's how you are." I said, "Sorry, like." And he said, "Well, that's no good." And he put one of his shell casings in my arm. I said, "Hold your arm out at full length." And I did do, and he put the shell casing on, and it wasn't all that heavy if you could hold it close to you, but at arm's length, it was heavy, and I don't know how long he made me hold it, but it seemed like days to me, but it was to teach me not to be careless with anything like that, and it was a stiff reminder that I should be careful what I was doing, and I knew my arms were aching when I finished holding this shell case, and it was an empty one, if it had been one with a shell in itself, I shouldn't have been able to hold it for many seconds.
What about the air raid fire patrol, where you had to protect the Victory in the dockyard? Air raid fire,
Well, they used to run every night. During the day, there was always somebody on the Victory as part of their job, and right again where the Victory was stationed in the centre of Portsmouth was some barracks for the Wrens, right at the side of this place, and they'd get a patrol up to go out to the Victory to act as air raid precautions, and would go on board the Victory or stand by, whatever it was, and after you'd been a couple of times you got used to the idea of what was happening. And with these Wren's huts, not huts, barracks, there was metal staircases running right up the side of them, and some of the lads used to volunteer to go out on this job, and there were always more people going out than what actually should have gone, because they found it was a good way of getting out to run up these staircases and chat to the Wrens through the windows. And in one particular case, when air raid sounded off, the chief PO and whoever in charge weren't anywhere in sight, but when the siren went off, they'd come dashing back, like, because they were in charge of it, and they had to be on duty there. And they had a count up one day when air raid had gone off, and we found out that there's about 10 men more than what should have been there. They'd more or less come, it was supposed to be a duty you were on, but they'd volunteered and got mixed in with the rest of them. And you could always look over when there was nothing going off and see lads on different landings where the Wrens were billeted talking to the Wrens through the windows.
What about the air raids on the back? Did anything much ever happen while you were on one of these?
Not while I was there, no.
Another thing is keyboard sentry guarding the keys at Whale Island itself. What was that about?
Well, it seems a farce, really, to say how strict everything was, that I should be allowed to do what I did. They put me on keyboard sentry, and it was to go round this where the commander lived in this barracks, and I didn't know this at the time, but there was when you went through this door where the keyboard was, there was these two hat stands, and there was always one hat on it, and if the skipper, the commander was in, there was two, you see, because that's where he used to hang his hat. Well, I went on this duty, and as I say, there was always some way of making people do more duty than they should have done, but people not turning up, or a PO would say, you stop there till I fetch you, and this keyboard sentry was supposed to be a serious job, because on that keyboard was every key that opened every door on Whale Island, and I'm there as a bit of a raw recruit guarding it. And after about half an hour or so, it must have been getting on for happened 10, 11 o'clock at night, I don't know, or happened half past 11, but I went wandering around. I was supposed to keep my eye on everything, and I went through where all the officers had the drinking sessions during the day, and there was always during the night. And I went round, everybody had cleared off to bed, and looking round this room before the people that were supposed to clear it up, looking round, there was glasses all over with different things in, sherry and whiskey and gin and everything. And of course, I hadn't had a drink for a day or two, and I went round and I were emptying some of these glasses, and I'd quite a few odd sips, and the people who were supposed to clear the place up ready for next day, because it was a special job for them, a privileged job actually, and they didn't used to bother turning up till very early next morning and clearing it all up then. They used to leave it stood all night, whereas they should have cleared it up after they left. And I had one or two of these drinks and came back to where these two hat stands were, and I saw this hat hung up there with the commander's hat on it, all gold braid, and I thought, oh, and there's a mirror at the side of each one, and I took my own hat off and put this on. I'm looking at myself through the mirror. Attention! Somebody shouted. Turns around and there's a lieutenant of some description, or a GPO, I can't quite remember which, it's a long time ago. And of course I snatched this cap back on the oak, put my own on and stood to attention. And I could see this, whoever was in charge wanted to say something, and he didn't want to say a lot because the commander was there. And so He said something, I can't just remember, and the commander was just at the back of me. He said, do you think you'll ever wear one of those? And I said, no, sir. And I was red as a beetroot, my face, and I'd been caught out like I should have seen him coming through the door in the first place. And he says, right, carry on. And he must have had one or two himself, the commander, because he was very lenient with me, and he must have said something to the other chap that was escorting him. I can't remember whether it was an officer or a petty officer or what it was, but he must have said something to him too. Normally I'd have been up on a charge and I'd have been in jug for not paying attention, but I never heard anything more about it. And he was smiling when he left the room, the commander. So he must have been a decent chap, you know. And and never heard another word about it, but I could have finished up in jail myself. And funny thing was, either just before then or just after, General de Gaulle come to inspect the troops and on Whale Island, and I was selected as one of the blooming guards to stand to attention and things like that. Well, I didn't know a lot about this drill, but managed to get through it, and course de Gaulle come, and his nose got there half an hour before he did, because he got a very big nose, and we got over that all right. So
now, you anything else about your time at Whale Island you remember?
I remember a lot when you've gone, but just offhand, nothing in particular, no.
When you qualified as anti-aircraft gunner, third class. That's had it. You fired any of the others other than the .5?
Oh, yes.
Which others had you fired? Was it the Barlett, Bofors and the Oerlikon, or is it yes, the .5?
The Oerlikon was a 20mm and Rolls-Royce 2-pounder, which was a single-firing... you loaded one shell at a time and fired it one at a time, and you had to have a loader there with you. You could get as many rounds off as what the loader could put in the thing, but you could only fire one shell at once on the Rolls-Royce.
The Rolls-Royce 2-pounder?
Yeah.
And what did you think of the Oerlikon?
I thought it was very good.
What was so good about it? How did you fire it?
You had a belt round your middle, round your shoulder part, strapped onto the pedestal that held the gun, and sighted through the thing, and you had two hands on this.
Is that the .5 you were talking about earlier?
No, the .5, you sat with this between your legs. And
sorry, carry on with the Oerlikon.
Oerlikon was, you stood there, and in a proper turret, you could go all the way around or whatever. You could go left to right, and you could sometimes go all the way around. But if you were going to shoot part of the bridge off by going to, there was a rail put so that the gun couldn't get that far. You'd got to elevate the gun and bring it down when you got on the other side of this. It's like a trellis work, really, but it stops your gun from going so far, and then you had to go up and over and down. You could go right the way round.
And how did you load it, the Oerlikon?
It's a magazine about as big as I'm holding my hands now, say.
About a foot by 6 inches, nearly.
About across, it would be about... anything between 9 and 12 inches, and it was round, and it was about that long, about a foot long, and you had, I think it was 30 shells in a magazine, but I can't remember exactly, that's another point, but it was a very fast firing gun, rapid firing, and you loaded that, you had a loader to load it onto the gun for you. And it clipped in, and once it was clipped in, you were ready for firing.
And what about the Bofors?
The Bofors, that was another... I only had a bit of a practice at Eastney on that, and I think that was a single firing gun. I'm not sure. Not definite about that. And the pom-pom, we had a...
What was that like?
A session on the pom-pom. Usually there was... anything from 2, possibly 4 or 6, but there were some of the pom-poms were 2 in on a gun. Some had 4 and some had 6, and I think later on they got 8 or something like that. But I didn't have a lot of practice on them. I think they was intended to be on small boats with a small gun.
So which gun were you? Did you do most practice with, the Oerlikon or?
No. They took you to give you a pretty general run of things. They took you through all the different guns that you were likely to come across on any ship, whether it was a large ship or a small ship.
But they didn't do the big turrets, did they?
No, we did training for in a turret where, but not such as you find on a battleship or a cruiser, no, nothing like that. They did that training at Whale Island, but we never come across it.
And you were third anti-aircraft gun, a third class?
Yeah.
And when would that be? That you'd gone there in September. When would you finish?
I'd say October, sometime October.
So about 2 months?
Yeah.
And what was next? Fort William, I think?
That's it. Up on the train right at the Fort William.
And did you know what you were going to? What unit you were going to?
No, in the Navy, they told you as much as you should know, and if they could avoid it, they didn't tell you too much about anything. I don't know if it was the chaps that were in charge who should have told you more, or whether it was just general naval routine, I don't know.
So what happened when you got to Fort William?
Well, we pulled up. It's altered now to what it was when I was there. I've been up there since. And you pulled in off the railway station right at the side of Loch Lenny, and you could look over the out of the station itself and see the sea on Loch Lenny. And you could have jumped off the platform station into the sea at that time, but they moved it further back into further back into Fort William now, so that when you get off the train now, you can't see the sea from there.
And who were you joining at Fort William?
Small boats, motor launchers, MTBs.
Did your unit have a name?
HMS. Now then, you've got me.
You can't remember the name of the boat, but you were working. The idea was it was where they were going to train you in motor launches and torpedo boats and that.
Yes, yeah, and harbour defence launches and anything of small craft like that.
And where were you based? What happened when you arrived?
At the Grand Hotel, which is one of the. I think even that's got a different name now. It was one of the largest hotels in Fort William that had been taken over by the Navy. In fact, everything that was of any value at all had been taken over by the Navy for training people. All there was lovely wooden panels around the walls, but we never saw them because they'd all been boarded up with plywood to stop them getting damaged.
And how many were there to the room?
Depended what room was, room sizes.
How many in yours?
We were pretty clogged up. You had about a foot between each row bunks, and two and three tier bunks. And in the room I was in, there must have been at least 30 or 40 of us. And different parts of the hotel with different amounts of people in different rooms. And also at the back of the hotel were some wooden huts where you used to go for training on things that could be taught on the shore.
So what sort of thing would you do on shore? Tell me about that first. What sort of training in them huts?
Well, semaphore, signalling, general knowledge such as tying bolts and tying knots and things like that. And you're supposed
so seamanship.
Seamanship, you're supposed to go out. I only went out about 3 to 4 times. I can't remember exactly. But they were supposed to take you out as often as they could, so that you'd get used to the sea.
And what was it like? This would be in within motor launches or MTBs?
It depended whichever was available at that particular time. I went on the different kinds that they were there.
What was it like?
It wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. But they always used to be kidding on about this island somewhere either through the next lock after Loch Lenny. There was three or four locks more or less adjoining each other, and there's supposed to be an island there where they give you free tea and biscuits and cakes and things like that. And everybody was always talking about it, but I never managed to land up on there. Used to get a cup of tea or whatever on the boats that you went on.
So it's just a rumour, really?
Well, I don't know if it was ever true or not. I'd be going to believe it, but I never finished up on it.
Now, they had quite a strict punishment routine there, didn't they?
There was a little room set up in the Grand Hotel where they had the radio, and they could... There was a tannoy set up all over the hotel and in the grounds, and a chap used to be on duty there all the time to pass messages on. And one particular time, he left his station, the chap had, and the room was empty, and some of the lads got in that room and they knew how to operate it, and so they shouted out, Will number 4 squadron of Shy Talks assemble in the main room? You know, some stupid remark just to make people laugh. And it came out all over the tannoy, all over. And anybody caught doing anything like that, of course, you'd got to pay for it if he caught you. And I don't know how I finished up on this list, but anyway, they filled your sack. You have an haversack full of large stones, about as big as a bowl, you know, these bowls that you have, and didn't let you fasten it tight round your waist, round your chest. You'd got to have it slack, so there's a bit of space between your body and the haversack, and as you were running, these things kept bouncing into the middle of your back, and just to teach you to behave yourself. And I finished up on this thing, and you had to run round the entrance to the Grand Hotel. It was a fairly steep runway and gravel, and as you were trying to run up this steep hill, you'd slide back a couple of times, you know, and it was a real punishment. And three or four times around there, and with this bag hitting you in the middle of your back, you knew about it, and it made you aware that you'd done wrong and you'd be careful not to do it again. And that was a thing. How I finished up with it, I can't remember, but I must have done something wrong.
Now, while you were there, you decided to volunteer for special services, didn't you?
Yeah.
Now, what made you decide to do that? Because that's not usual. What made you decide to want to do it?
Well, these small boats and MTBs and things like that, and also there's a commando training base right close by, and we'd bump into one or two of them lads, and because there were no green berets at that particular time, as far as I can remember, but you knew they were on special service. And it snowed a couple of times while we were there, and we volunteered to go out and dig the sheep out, help the farmers on Ben Nevis, around the base of Ben Nevis. Hell of a lot of sheep got snowed in, and we went and helped them to dig them out. And when you pull these sheep out, a lot of them, the necks were just useless, no strength in the necks at all, just same as if they might have been dead. And we'd pull them out, and we'd thinking they were dead, and the farmer'd say, all right, they'll come round in a bit. And after we'd dug them out and they'd done something to them, they did come back to life again. We did a bit of that. But one of the worst things at Fort William was the fact that there was a flu epidemic. And dancing, it's only a small place, and used to have a couple of dancers there, but while we were there, the dancing was forbidden. You couldn't congregate because the passing flew on from one to the other. So it was a pretty... You couldn't do much at all. Go for odd half pint of beer in the pub. And that wasn't encouraged because of mixing with other people.
How long were you there for? You'd gone there in about October, 41.
Yeah.
When did you leave? You went to HMS Hornet next.
Went...
To a Hornet next. HMS Hornet.
Yeah.
Portsmouth,
I think.
That's
it. After...
When was that, though? How long had you been at Fort William the First?
I can't remember the exact time, but must have been getting on for Christmas time when I went to the Hornet.
And what were you doing at HMS Hornet? Was this where you were being trained for special services, or hadn't you been called up for that yet?
I hadn't been called up at all, and I was never called up for special services, not to be as a special serviceman. But we always thought that because you volunteered for things like that, they'd make good use of you, and I think that's why we finished up on the centre's air raid. But I can't speak for anybody else on the boat because I don't know whether they volunteered for it or not.
Now, what happened when you got to HMS Hornet, to Portsmouth? What was the setup there?
Going out and training again on any boats that was kicking about.
So you were just taking boats out?
Any boat, these boats had got a regular crew, but they'd get as many on board of us that were training to go out with them and have a run round and get to know the general, get your sea legs and get to know the general routine.
And were these MTBs or motor launches or both?
Anything. Armour defence launches, motor launches, motor anti-submarine boats. They were all more or less in the same class as small boats.
And when you went out of them, you'd be acting as anti-aircraft, but
yes,
as a gunner?
Or whatever. In some cases, you never got a chance to go on a gun. You just have to act as a... But they were only on odd days. You didn't go out for any big period of time. You'd only be on one of these boats, happen for 5 or 6 hours, and then back in ashore again. And... One of the boats that was in there was, I believe, it number 74, and it was the fastest boat in the British Navy at that time.
But you didn't get a go on it then?
No, I didn't get a go on it any time, and Lord Newborough was a skipper, but at that time he was just known as Mickey Wynn, and he was a right case, he used to... He died last year sometime.
He was a lieutenant, was he, or a sub-lieutenant?
Lieutenant.
What was so unusual about him?
Well, at Christmas time, as I say, it was very near Christmas time, we had a Christmas dance in at HMS Hornet, and everybody that could get there got there. And about halfway through the evening, there were screams coming from all over the dance floor, and there were wrens running about all over the place. And then we found out what it was. Mickey Wynn had been down into the piggery. All naval establishments had these places where the spare food that didn't get eaten used to get fed to the pigs, and it helped with the rations. And he'd been down there and got one of these little pigs and brought it up and put it on the middle of the dance floor. And it was covered in all sorts of stuff that you find on most big side floors. And when everything had calmed down, he was stood there going, ho, 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 having a real good time to himself, he was.